This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The University of Vermont Medical Center in Burlington plays a key role in providing high-level hospital services to a huge part of Vermont and upstate New York. 2 years ago, Eileen Whalen became the president and chief operating officer of the hospital. She started in healthcare as a nurse and came to Vermont from Seattle, where she was also a hospital administrator. In the 2 years since, Whalen has been at the UVM Medical Center, the hospital and the healthcare system have undergone a lot of change. I wanted to talk with Whalen, in particular, about an experiment aimed at changing the way doctors and hospitals are paid to care for patients. The medical center is one of four hospitals that have agreed to get reimbursed for patients on Medicaid based on a preset per patient per month fee. Sitting recently in a conference room in the administrative wing of the hospital, I asked Whalen to describe how this attempt at payment reform is going.
So today we get paid based on fee-for-service, as you mentioned, and that literally means for every procedure, for every surgery, for every office visit, lab test, there's a fee associated with the service rendered. What the per-member, per-month fee is meant to do is really change the incentives totally. We believe if we really invest in the population and get upstream of some of these chronic diseases, we will make a significant difference over time. So smoking cessation, weight management, healthy diets, exercise, we know that these are all things that if we can impart that into our population base, then we will change the chronic diseases that impact people later in life. But it's a big risk because we are taking that per member per month. Now,
that's something like $6 per member
per month.
We're talking about something like 30,000 people, and these are all people who are on Medicaid?
We're starting with the Medicaid. And it is roughly 30,000. And the incentive then is to keep them healthy and out of the hospital. As we've said here, the most expensive patient will be those who occupy a bed at the hospital. But it's difficult because it's change. It's change in the way physicians practice. It's a change in the way we think about investing in the community, which actually for me as a nurse is so much fun. It's really an exciting piece of what we do. So now we can look at the total health of our community. So as you know, we've done quite a bit in investing with our partners locally. We are into our working with Champlain Housing Trust into our second hotel. This has been so incredibly important to our community. We know that homelessness is one of the social determinants of health. If we can discharge patients from here to a location that's safe, that's clean, that has the wraparound services with our partners, we know that by putting a roof over their head, getting them involved in a good diet and exercise program with good health care, that's just one example of how we're working with our partners and collaborating to really change the social determinants of health, which is investing in population health management.
What is the safety measure to make sure that you're actually taking patients' best interests to heart? For example, if I am somebody who is sort of turned away from medical care until I have a heart attack and die in my house, that is probably the cheapest for the hospital instead of, you know, me continuing to have care and where you're also checking in on me to make sure I'm having healthy behaviors and doing the right things, exercising and eating well. That takes time and resources.
So population health management does not mean controlling your health care. It does not mean gatekeeping, as you knew in the early 80s when we really looked at care in a very different way. So I envision that in the future, when you go into your primary care office for your annual physical, you will be seen by a team of experts. So you'll have a health coach. You will have a nutritionist. If you have diabetes, you'll have a diabetes educator right there with you. So the person who becomes a specialist is your family medicine physician. We already use APPs, which are advanced practice providers, so whether it's a nurse practitioner or a PA, we already, although we're still working very diligently on it, we're embedding psychiatric care in that visit as well, because we know if we get in front of the mental health diagnosis, it is treatable and preventable going forward or the very critical nature. So I envision that it's going to be quite different. It doesn't mean that we would control access differently so that you would not get the necessary medical care. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. We want to see you and have more touch points with you, whether that's done in an office, whether that's done with telemedicine, whether that's done with an app in the future. So it doesn't mean that we would do less. In fact, it it really puts the onus of responsibility on us to do more. And that also includes educating and really involving and engaging our patients in a very different conversation.
But what is the actual incentive in the program for doing that? Because if the incentive is financial, isn't it in the hospital's best interest to come up with whatever is going to make it the most money, not necessarily whatever is going to make the patient the healthiest? Because those are not necessarily the same thing.
Clearly, our mission and vision is really about working together to improve the health of our community. But if you take it up a level and just look at the business aspects, the way hospitals get paid every single year, we don't control Medicaid reimbursement. We don't control rates with Medicare. So the government payers control that. We have a right, an opportunity to negotiate with commercial payers, but we have a regulatory process in this state, very appropriately, that helps manage that. So in any given year, a hospital administrator really doesn't know what their budget is. I don't know what my total dollar amount is that I can spend on the resources necessary to provide that healthy care to our population. So by getting a fixed payment per member per month, it gives me a dollar amount that I know is a fixed budget. And then it's my responsibility to manage the resources, make sure that my teams have what they need to be successful. You know, we're going into this for all the right motivations to really change the incentives. But truthfully, it may also give me an opportunity to understand my business model just a tad bit better than we do today. So I'm sure one of the things that patients may be concerned about is, are they getting access? Are they getting the care that they need? Or are we withholding it for some reason because of a per member per month and the perception? I think it's really important for our community to know that all of this payment reform comes with very strict monitoring criteria. So there's absolutely no incentive to not put the resources in the right place. So I think the public should feel very comfortable knowing that we are publishing that and working very hard to improve those outcome measures.
I want to go back just to this pilot program for one more question, which is, do you have a sense of whether or not the Medicaid population is a good barometer of how this would work in the rest of the populations that you serve, people who are on other kinds of insurance and who have other healthcare needs?
So if I take it up just a little bit,
please.
The state of Vermont, we have been ranked the highest in the United States, number one in the United States for our healthcare systems. So right off the bat, you know that Vermonters are healthier regardless of their insurance. Having said that, typically the Medicaid population is a little bit more challenging just by definition in terms of social determinants of health. And so we believe if we can make a difference with the most challenging population, then this should work well with all Vermonters.
I was told that at least in the recent few weeks, you've had a very high patient census. Why is that?
So we have had a very, starting in fall of last year, very unexpected high census. What happened this past fall was quite unprecedented. A month, 2 months, you have a high census. You start to delve in. In 2015, we had a really high census, we knew, related to a flu vaccine that was not effective. And we didn't have that to base this past fall on. So when we experienced a 5 or 6 month higher than normal peak census, we were able to sit back and really take a look at what were the causative factors. In our community, it was Chittenden County residents with chronic disease. It follows the demographics of our community. We have an aging population in Chittenden County. We do know with Medicaid expansion, people have had access to medical care that they didn't have in the past, and probably were not seeking medical care as routinely as they could have. And so those chronic diseases were exacerbated. You couple that with a very cold winter, and it's a perfect storm. We're very pleased to say things have moderated over these last 2 months. We are back down to normal. We are so incredibly grateful to our community for working with us during this peak census. We are very, very grateful and very proud of our physicians and staff who really stepped up to make sure the highest quality of care was always delivered consistently, regardless of where the patient was. But we were really stretching. We were using the resources of our network So if patients really didn't need to be here and could, for example, go back to Porter or go back to our hospitals in New York, we were transferring them back to get that care locally so that we could make sure that we had the tertiary quaternary beds available in our community for those patients in need.
And did you have longer than normal wait times for care for people who were not in emergency care or acute crisis?
Access, I will say, has been a problem that we've been trying to address for quite a period of time. This really didn't impact our ambulatory setting as much as it impacted our acute care admissions. What our biggest challenge was, and it's a challenge all the hospitals in the state of Vermont face, is the mental health crisis. Many of these patients were patients that were in our emergency departments for extended periods of time because there's no ability to triage them to the appropriate level of care in our community. We also had a problem and continue to this day challenged with when the acute care stay is over, where we can discharge some of these very challenging patients. So what we experienced was a greater length of stay. When you have a greater length of stay and you have more people coming in through the front end, it creates that real tight compaction. Again, it's not ideal, and it's something it's caused us, given us the opportunity to really go back and look at our systems and processes and challenged us to really be a little bit more creative and anticipate this in the future and pull some triggers sooner than later to really support our staff and to support the needs of our community.
You also have a big building expansion project that is underway, and I was watching a promotional video before I came over to interview you that was explaining why this is necessary and why, even though it's costly, it's a good thing for patients in the end because it will attract better physicians and it'll provide a better patient experience. So what exactly are you doing, and why do you feel like you have to sell me on it?
Well, I don't think I have to sell you on it, because if you've been an inpatient here in our organization and had the lovely opportunity to share a room with a stranger, something that you'd never consider if you rented a hotel room for the night. You would not sleep with a stranger. But Western medicine has done that forever. So I don't think I have to convince you, but we are so incredibly excited and proud to be able to bring the Miller Building to our community. Bob and Holly Miller have been incredibly generous. So the Miller Building is a bed replacement project. So many of our med-surg beds were built in the early 1940s.
And med-surg means?
Medical surgical bed, excuse me. So the typical patient bed outside of an ICU would be referred to as medical surgical bed. And these beds are typically in two bedrooms, and they're small, they're very cramped. It's very difficult to get a chair in there for two family members, one member per patient, and typically that's not what a family unit is. And then if you have to bring any technology, portable x-ray, for example, and or a team of learners into the room, it's just really, really tight. It's also one of the most difficult things to have to give really difficult news to a patient regarding a diagnosis or the outcome of some procedure without privacy. There is no ability to maintain confidentiality when the patient next to you is literally separated by a curtain. So the new rooms are all private rooms, and they're designed for our patients to have their families or loved ones move in during the hospitalization. So we have embraced the patient family-centered movement, which is taking off across the United States. And we really believe that the person who knows the most about our patient is their family or loved one. And so including them in the care delivery model is absolutely key.
That was Eileen Whalen, president and COO of the University of Vermont Medical Center in Burlington. We recorded that interview last week.